All right, back on the Jeff Calkins show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Only the Strong Survive by Chicago soul singer Jerry Butler, who died a few days ago at age 85. Only the strong will survive the NBA playoff race.
Yeah, here we go. Grizzlies had a 1-1 weekend. Let's just go through them chronologically. You wrote about the win over the Magic. Bit of a rock fight there. What'd you think?
You always ask me about games that are not the most recent game, but I just don't. I don't remember the details of those games anymore. You know, I don't. They pulled out a win. I don't remember even.
Let me refresh your memory, because the two things that stuck out for me there were Gigi hitting the three straight threes, which is a useful way to deploy Gigi if he'll do that for you, and then Ja. Not the most efficient game, but sort of willing him to victory in the fourth quarter.
So I think the Ja stuff is interesting. I tend to think about broader than like individual game, you know, at this point.
Yep.
I think the Ja stuff the last couple games is interesting because it's sort of a glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing, depending on how you want to look at it. I think his engagement has been good in these games. I think his spirit's been there. I think some of the stuff we've worried about in terms of like him trying to impact the game, him like being fully present, you know, at all times. That's been there these last two games. And he still hasn't been, like, great Ja. And I think that what that underscores is a point Jeffrey made last week that I agreed with already, but I think these last couple games really underscores it, that the number one problem with Ja has been physical, that he seems so banged up from the hip and the shoulder stuff that even when he's all the way there in terms of mentality and approach, it's not the same electric Ja as at his peak. It just seems like it's the 90% version right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, by the way. I was pondering whether, as I was thinking of talking to you here, whether I was going to go through it chronologically or I was going to ask you what are the best things that you saw from the Grizzlies over the weekend. And I said earlier in the show that I thought Ja's engagement was, in fact, one of the best things I saw over the weekend, both in the particularly in the fourth quarter against Orlando, but then he was good and he was feisty and everything else last night, and we've been worried about his engagement. So I take all that as a positive. It is interesting though. You're right. Like we've a lot of times seen 42-point Ja, right? And we don't see that anymore.
It's not even the box score line. Yeah. Like watch him play. It's just his quickness and bounce off the dribble, his explosiveness to get by defenders, to get over defenders. It's still good, but it is not the absolute electric Ja. Like you can see, it's a little bit more of a struggle to get to spots and to get to spaces and to do stuff that at his peak he does more easily. And I think that's ultimately, I mean, this is a guy who dislocated his hip this season and then had a shoulder injury to a surgically repaired shoulder, you know? I mean, it's hard to discount that kind of stuff.
So it's interesting because obviously here we're sort of, I mean, you are commenting on what you're seeing with your eyeballs, and that's not speculation. It's sort of interesting, though, like we don't know his, you know, physical state at any, you know, granular level. Presumably you're talking less about an injury than just sort of the banged up explosiveness, the lack of that comes in the wake of injuries. But I guess there's no way to know exactly what he's dealing with, of course.
No, but we could watch him play, and we know the track record this season of the kinds of injuries he's had.
Yeah,
like yes, it's all circumstantial evidence, but like it's a strong circumstantial case.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, that's a bit of a downer.
is it? Is it though? Like, I mean,
is it?
That's the thing. Is it? It's sort of a glass half full, half empty thing. I just, you know, I don't, but I don't know if he is going to be able to regain. My assumption, hope/assumption, is that he will regain that absolute peak athleticism at some point. But will it come still in this season where you're still playing games like every other day? That's a real question.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the the engagement is a prerequisite, right? So if you don't have the engagement, I'll throw up your hands here. And it also has been the sort of main source of worry. What's wrong with Ja? The vibe stuff, right? So that, yes.
Right.
I guess it's hard to imagine that if it's explosiveness, whatever, crackle, whatever, how you want to describe it, that in this march to the end that he's going to find that. But whatever. So, all right. So Ja was one theme of the weekend, I thought. Obviously, last night, the offensive rebounding was a huge problem. And it has been other times. And you wonder, you know, Zach Edey's supposed to be an answer here, or at least part of the answer here. We've seen this when they go up against physical teams that they can be a challenge. Cleveland's not even that particularly. I mean, they got two big guys. What did you make of that? And is that does it highlight a real weakness on this team?
The Grizzlies are not a great defensive rebounding team. And so like that is a weakness. Sometimes the balls just bounce a certain way. I mean, that was like a first half thing last night more than a total game thing. And it was almost a little bit, it was a part an effort thing and part of a statistical anomaly kind of thing a little bit. So I think defensive rebounding can be an issue for the Grizzlies at times, but I don't think of it as one of the overwhelming issues for the team. It's over the course of the season, it's not as big of an issue as the turnover problem,
right,
which is more of a recurring thing. I think you could react too much to whatever went wrong yesterday, and like that's an issue, but to me, it's not like an overwhelming issue.
Right. Two of the things that I took hope in, or one was Ja, and the other one was, you know, you look up last night, and when Jaren played, they were +7, again, imperfect stat, all of that. And when Vince played, and there's 20 minutes, and those minutes, I'm going to guess, are going to bump up, they were also +7.
Yeah, there's a magical word for why. I mean, anything can happen in an individual game, and that can be a mirage, but there's a magical word for why that tends to happen with those two guys, and that magical word is defense.
Yeah,
and so yeah, like those are like probably the two best defensive players on the team, and they're also like they're not exactly like, you know, zeros on offense either. Like Jaren has almost been better on offense than defense this season, as good as he's been. So yeah, I think on the whole, the more those guys play, the better your team's going to be. That won't be the case every minute or every game, but I think that's generally true. Vince, you know, seems like he's slowly picking up the minute stuff. Jaren, you know, Jenkins fouled him out last night. That doesn't happen as much as it used to, but it did happen last night.
Yep.
And so we'll see.
It's rotation stuff. We continue to look at that and observe what they're doing in terms of the rotation, what Taylor Jenkins is doing.
Yeah.
What did you make of that over the weekend?
So I'm working on a column this morning that will go up later today that has sort of multiple reactions to the stuff from the weekend. But that's sort of one of them. It's interesting to me. So they played six games since the trade deadline. They played three close games, three games where like you're working your way to a quote unquote closing lineup, right? We think about it, like all games happen that way and most games don't, but there's been three games that have happened that way. And you know that in the Grizzlies' preferred closing lineup, it's going to be Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jared Jackson, and then the mystery comes next. And so in all three of those close games, Santi Aldama has been the fourth guy. Not a starter, but he's been the closing lineup all three of those games. The fifth guy has been different in every game. One game it was Fitz Williams, one game it was Brandon Clark, one game it was Luke Kennard. In none of the games was it either of the two rookies who start. Like, anything can happen, I guess, going forward, but that feels like a real trend to me of, like, where they're going. The idea that Santi, while he may remain the quote-unquote sixth man, is like, going to be, like, the fourth guy, you know, in terms of where they lean into in games. And then the idea that, like, you're playing the game flow and the matchups and who's playing well, and the most likely next guy is going to be one of those three, Vince Williams, Brandon Clark, Luke Kennard. That feels right to me. Like, maybe Jalen Wells breaks through that at some point. But what we've really seen lately is that those rookies are still starting, but their minutes have been fading. G.G. Jackson's minutes have been fading. And you've seen this trend away from, like, those three, the two rookies and the super and the youngest guy on the team, and more towards Vince Williams, Santi Aldama, Brandon Clark, Luke Kennard. Like, that feels like where things are likely headed.
Do you think it's likely, though, that Vince will emerge as a fifth as opposed to sort of matchup dependent alternate. I mean, obviously, Brandon Clarke was really good, particularly against Orlando defensively. So there may be moments like I
feel like Kennard, of those four guys we're talking about to choose from for the final two.
Yeah.
I feel like Kennard's going to be the fourth. But the Santi, Brandon, Vince thing, I don't feel like between Brandon and Vince, like if Santi's a fourth, I don't think there's a clear pecking order there. I think that's a game situation kind of thing, because like they're great with Brandon Clarke, and what they've shown is that there's enough versatility there. Santi can basically like is basically a perimeter player on offense, and we've seen, and that Orlando game was a prime example. We've seen that Brandon Clarke, his ability to defend on the perimeter is just a great closing lineup thing. Now, do they ever get to a point where they go Brandon and Vince and not Santi and really ramp up the defense? That I would like to see some of that. But I don't know if I would say definitively Vince is going to be ahead of Brandon Clarke as a closing lineup option. I think it's a matchup thing. I think it depends on the game. But I wonder if Vince is going to be a starter, though.
So, all right. So the Grizzlies now, they are still tied for second in the West with Denver. They are two up on the Lakers, who beat the Nuggets convincingly, by the way, over the weekend. Houston, also two up on Houston. And they play 9 of their next 11 at home, including their next 5. They're 21-6 at home, so that's promising. Start with the Suns tomorrow. Do you think, I mean, I don't know if you have any comments on this stretch generally, but do you think, how important is it that they finish second as opposed to fifth, as opposed to third, as opposed to, you know, like, do we know? Like, we don't know how anything's going to fall.
It's hard to say definitively on that stuff because you don't know what the matchup. So you're going to be on the other side of it. Just broadly speaking, like, the higher the better.
Yes.
The fact that the Grizzlies have been so good at home, like, you want to lean into more home games in the playoffs. And so I think the second, Oklahoma City seems so much better than everyone else. And if you want to try to make a run to the conference finals, it seems like you want to try to avoid them until you get there.
Right.
So that would say you want to be in the 2-3 range. In terms of the difference between 2 and 3, the one difference you know is that
home court,
you would have home court advantage in the second round series. What you don't know is the difference between the first round matchups. But I think the Grizzlies have a good chance in this coming up stretch. 9 of 11 at home. The two road games are at New Orleans, at Dallas. Grizzlies have the third best home record in the league this season right now. I think they're better than Boston on their home court. And so, like, they've been mucking along the last couple weeks, but they've been mucking along playing road games against good teams. You know, you lose at Indiana, you lose at the Clippers. These are not shameful losses
right.
at Cleveland, right? And so you've been mucking along, playing 500 ball against a tough schedule, mostly on the road, and now you're going to come home and, like, you know, they get a chance to, like, rack up wins and really solidify, you know. I mean, the Lakers are sort of interesting because, like, you know, how much have they really transformed themselves? That's something to worry about. But I think this is a good stretch for the Grizzlies to really solidify themselves, you know, in that 2-3 range.
You got some signature games in there, too. You got the Knicks and Oklahoma City, both of whom have humiliated you at some point. You got them in this next stretch at home.
Right.
So, yeah, in terms of the Lakers, I guess my thought was that I was enraged they were able to pick up Luka for the next 10 years, but I didn't assume they would be better. In fact, I assumed they would be worse this year. And then the Mark Williams trade falls through as well. And then they do what they did. It's one game. But they did what they did against Denver, which wasn't just Luka being Luka. That was sort of the headliner. But they held the Nuggets to 100 points and absolutely bottled up Jokic. What are your thoughts on the Lakers here now, looming two games behind the Grizzlies?
Well, the Lakers' defense has been good for, like, the past month, and that's even after trading away Anthony Davis. And you look at the roster, and the defense should be – you think the defense should be bad. And so, that to me, that's the question. Like, is the good defense a regular season blip, and it will return to what their roster looks like it should be? Or have they figured out some kind of formula or what? I haven't had dug into it to see why they've been so good, but they have been good. Or if they found something sustainable that they're, like, even with this talent, going to end up being a decent defensive team. And if they're going to be a decent defensive team, yes, worry about the Lakers. Because, like, Luka and LeBron, those guys are each in their career an offense unto themselves, and they got two of them. And so, like, we can't have the Lakers being decent on defense.
No.
Like, that's like, we can't have that.
It's clearly the return of Jared Vanderbilt is what has tipped the scale.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's the absence of D'Angelo Russell. I don't know. But
could be that. Yeah. It's interesting. So here's the other thing. I was listening to the show that precedes mine, and they were talking about the Knicks. The Knicks had a terrible weekend. They got blown out by the Cavs, and then they lost to Boston a game which they trailed big as well. And so they were discussing whether at the end Tibbs should be fired, because that's where talk radio. That's where we go in the end.
It feels very similar, because the whole Knicks thing is they lose all the good teams.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
The Knicks fans are upset about it.
That's where I was going to go here was. It's interesting to be, like, what's the crime in being a really good team, but not as good as the Cavs, the Celts, or the Thunder?
Yeah. This is another one of the topics in my column I'm writing. Every single thing tells you there's a clear, bold line between Oklahoma City, Boston, and Cleveland, and everyone else. All evidence tells you, like, there's a line there. And whether you want to call the teams just below that line contenders or not, that's like a linguistic decision or whatever. Like, it's been, what is the meaning of whatever the meaning of the word is or whatever. That's up to you, however you want to define the term contender. But there's a clear line by all indications between those three teams and everyone else. But evidence suggests, like, the Grizzlies and the Knicks and the Nuggets and maybe the Lakers are the teams that, you know, are right below that line. Like, you know, all evidence suggests the Grizzlies are nowhere as good as the top three teams, but are every bit as good as the rest. And is that true or not? I don't know.
Right.
The real question there, I think, is that Denver and the Lakers are the teams you look at and say, evidence tells you Denver's a step behind those teams, but does that change in the playoffs because they have Nikola Jokic? And evidence tells you the Lakers are a clear step behind those teams, but is that different now because they haven't had Luka and LeBron together all season? With the Knicks and the Grizzlies, it's just like they're a step behind those teams, and there's nothing. It doesn't seem like anything's going to change that, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, first of all, like, you look at some of those teams, and you look, like, were the Cavs better than the Grizzlies last year? Like, the Cavs have made additions that the Grizzlies, you know, haven't, most recently DeAndre Hunter, right? Like, they have, in a way, that have helped to elevate them. And the Marcus Smart thing did not work. So I think that's partly explains it. It's just to be that step below. Is it satisfying? Right. I mean, in the end, it beats the hell out of being the Wizards. Right. You know,
one thing I've been thinking about, and I think I've sort of voiced it a little bit, maybe here or in stuff I've written, but not in a full throated way. And, like, the Grizzlies are so good that no one wants to hear wait till next year, right? And
right.
People shouldn't. People should be focused on being good right now. But this year's Cleveland, to me, is a real, like, is a real example for what could be next year's Grizzlies.
See, you're forecasting a coaching change. I'm just kidding.
That's a topic we'll revisit depending on what happens in the playoffs. I think that's a real topic, you know? But also, it's like, what's Zach Edey going to be in year two? Zach Edey is a very mixed thing right now. But if you look at Zach Edey's season, and I did some of this, I'm not writing about it this week, but if you compare Zach Edey's season to, like, Jared Allen earlier in his career, like Cleveland's fourth guy, like, it's kind of similar. Like, but is he going to have the growth in year two, year three? Can he be the Jared Allen to Jaren Jackson's Evan Mobley? He's not that right now, but he's a rookie. So what's he going to be next year? You know, what's that supporting cast of, you know, Jalen Wells and Vince Williams and these guys? Like, what's that going to be next year? Is Ja going to come back next year more in peak form? Again, I don't think people should just be saying wait till next year, because who knows? There could be all kinds of injury things next year. And the Grizzlies should be as good as they can be right now. But, like, what's done is done at the trade deadline. And this roster is, like, going to mostly be back next season, and it's all still young, and the Grizzlies are just going to keep being good, you know, and there's a chance they can be better.
Well, I was actually going to make that point with when you compare it to the Knicks have taken their swings. Like, the Knicks have
That's right.
taken big swings, and they're basically a middle-aged team, right? And so The Grizzlies are not. The Grizzlies have, as you pointed out, it's not so much the growth in the core, which it used to be two or three years ago. We were talking about the maturation and the development of the core. Now it's the maturation and growth to look forward to of some of the pieces around the core.
Cleveland could have said after last season, a lot of people wanted them to. They could have said, you know, we've gone as far as we can with this core of players. Let's break it up. They didn't do that. They said, we believe in the core of players. Let's tweak it. And that tweaking meant the lineup around them. That tweaking happened to mean the head coach, whatever. They decided, we believe in this. Let's let it grow together more. Let's keep tweaking it and turn the good thing we have to try to turn it into better. And I think that's the Grizzlies right now. We'll see where they go this season. But their core is a good thing, and I think they're going to keep trying to tweak it into something better.
Mobley versus Jaren last night, by the way. I guess point Mobley?
Yeah, in that game. I mean, those guys are great. I love those guys. Two of my favorite players in the league as a basketball fan. That's sort of what I'm leading with in the column I'm writing is those two guys. When you have that guy, your team is probably going to be good. And like Chet Holmgren is that guy. Wimby is that guy. There aren't that many guys like that in the league. You know, we used to call them unicorns, and now there are, like, too many of those. Like, they used to use the word unicorn.
Right.
But there aren't that many. There aren't that many. Like, the guys who can defend the rim at an elite level and can step out and play offensively on the perimeter and just make your team good. They won't necessarily be the guys who average 30 points a game or have all the highlight dunks, but they're the guys. If you have those guys, you're probably going to be good. And like Mobley and Jaren this season are those two guys.
All right, look for that piece in the Daily Memphian later on today, I'm going to presume. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Listen, any real estate agent can stick a sign in your yard, but not any real estate agent can sell your house or get you every dollar that you need to get from your house. Beverly, person I talked to, signed up with Josh Isaw. And what she was impressed by, honestly, was his marketing strategy. She worked with her home, developed this winning strategy, reached hundreds and hundreds of buyers, and sold her house fast. That's what Josh Isaw and the team at Keller Williams can do, even in a market that can be a little bit tricky. Phone number is 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. I tell you about Josh Isaw. Once upon a time, GP told you about Josh Isaw. But you don't have to trust either of us. Pop on over, look at the Google reviews. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. It's Josh Isaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Again, the phone number, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins, Show 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Roberta Flack has died, Jeffrey. You know Roberta Flack? Are you familiar with her work?
So I saw this on Twitter. I'm not
she, sure. She sang Killing Me Softly.
Okay, yes.
And the first time I ever saw your face or whatever that one is. You know, first time I ever saw you. That one? You know.
Yep.
Turns out she had Lou Gehrig's disease.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Died at 88 of cardiac arrest on the way to the hospital. Roberta Flack, former school teacher, who was a massive star. Has died at the age of 88. All right, let's play Believe It or Not. Now it's time for Believe It. The Rams are going to trade Matt Stafford, and the Steelers should be the team that goes to get him. There's really two believe it's in there.
Yeah, so I'll take the first one. I don't actually believe this. My understanding is this is...
They've given them permission to seek a trade, to talk to other teams.
It seems like they're trying to figure out what the market is because Stafford, obviously, this is like the last big contract. Can he get $50 million, whatnot? But I don't think that this is actually... I think the headline reads a lot more jarring than what is happening in actuality.
I don't understand why the hell the Rams would do it. Now, the Rams moved on from Jared Goff once upon a time. You know, like, he's obviously very confident in his ability to do whatever he wants, you know, what needs to be done with quarterbacks. The last time I saw Matt Stafford, he was within an inch of beating the Eagles. You know?
I mean, they played the Eagles the most competitively of any team.
So, one of the arguments is that they've and very successfully, by the way. Rams went from Super Bowl champions to now they are built around youth, right? They got really good young studs on defense. They're going to have to pay them, et cetera. And so do they want this aging quarterback as they go into the next their next era? But they should be good next year. Yet again, I don't know why you would move on from Matt Stafford. You obviously, the reason is you don't want to pay him $50 million for a three-year deal or something like that, right? I mean, that would be why. I, in the end, don't believe they will trade him. If you ask me that question, I would say I do not believe that. If he is available, let's take the second one. If Matt Stafford's available, it's the Steelers that should go get him.
I think I do believe that. I think it's the one that makes the most sense.
Clearly,
like,
right?
Like, when you think about, okay, what do they want to do offensively? Like, they want to control the clock and take big, deep shots. Well, who's better at that than Matthew Stafford?
And also, who else can you really say is a quarterback away, right? Not the Raiders. They need a quarterback. You can't say they're a quarterback away. Not the Giants. They need a quarterback. You can't say they're a quarterback away. That's the other team that you hear about in connection with Matt Stafford all the time, partly because the management there needs to win. And so they might do something that is actually not in the best interest of the franchise, that is short-sighted. At a time, by the way, when Arch Manning is getting ready to come out, boy, this must crush you. You win meaningless games with Matt Stafford as your quarterback? What the hell is the point of that?
Yeah, no, I mean, Matt Stafford's the path to, like, 6-11.
Is there any other quarterback that's – any other team that you can argue is a quarterback away that would be
– I mean, like, how do you – do you feel like Stafford raises the ceiling of – like, I think Stafford's better than Geno, but do I think that that's all that Seattle needs?
Needs? Probably not. No, they feel like they're a quarterback
I mean, there's
away.
Always the question of, okay, would Stafford make sense for the Vikings as a bridge quarterback? I mean, I think it's true. I think the Vikings had more problems than just Sam Darnold in that playoff game. But if you flip those quarterbacks, that's a completely different game.
I could see that would be one. That would be one I could see if you could somehow manage to flip those quarterbacks. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff that will be of great interest at the NFL Combine this week. I mean, again, as Jeffrey said, the main interest is hand sizes for the quarterbacks
for sure.
Who are going to be drafted.
Obviously.
But among the other themes, Jeffrey, okay, among the other themes, well, we got all the quarterbacks. Kirk Cousins' future in Atlanta, right? Like, you got all the GMs are going to talk.
Yep.
And so what is Terry Fontenot going to say about Kirk Cousins and his future in Atlanta?
Kirk's a Falcon.
What?
Kirk's a Falcon.
That's what they're going to say? Kirk's a Falcon? It feels like it's time for Michael Penix Jr., doesn't it?
It does, but he's going to publicly say Kirk's a Falcon to try and keep any type of leverage he can.
There will be a lot of talk about Myles Garrett.
Yep. The trade, obviously.
There was a story last week I was reading that if you look at the cap situation, it really doesn't make sense for the Browns to trade him before June 1st.
Yep.
So there could be talk about it, but no GM is going to say we really want Myles Garrett.
Like, yes,
the command, you know, whether you want him to go to the Bills or the Commanders or wherever you think he should wind up, no GM is going to come out and talk about Myles Garrett. Detroit will be interesting because Dan Campbell loses not just both offensive and defensive coordinators, but that staff generally was riddled because then they went out and hired more members of the staff to be on their staffs. So do you think that is going to really set back the Lions?
I don't know if it's going to really set back. I do think that this is an important part of the Dan Campbell era, because when we see the CEO type head coach, the culture guy, one of the hardest things to do is inevitably when your staff gets raided, how well do you replace them? Do you keep it going? Because what we've seen more times than not is that's when those types of coaches really start to struggle, because it's just hard to find. It's hard to keep an elite staff for the reasons of everyone wants your staff.
Another topic that may or may not come up. Well, it's going to come up because Baltimore is going to have to talk about it. But there are quite some sexual misconduct allegations.
We have 16, I believe.
Against Justin Tucker. It's the Deshaun Watson problem. That there are the Baltimore Banner, I think,
is
and it's basically the Baltimore Banner is the Daily Memphian of Baltimore. In fact, they sort of model themselves after us, or sort of it's the same sort of approach. a digital newspaper in a town where the franchise, the legacy paper, was struggling. And they have, you know, massage therapist after massage therapist after massage therapist has come forth to say that he acted inappropriately during their sessions.
Yes. Well, I mean, what's also like fascinating about this is like there's like Reddit posts that like that date back. Like,
is that true?
Yeah,
I
like,
have not.
There's an internet trace that goes back years.
And what are the Reddit posts from massage therapists or from
it's been
saying,
it's,
oh my God, this guy's ick? Or
basically, it's a lot of like Justin Tucker. Like this is even before like the Sean stuff came out. It's like Justin Tucker's not allowed at like these massage places. Like guy's pervert. Like it's a lot of like the accusations that wound up being that have substance.
That's substance, yeah, that have emerged.
Yes.
He also, by the way, wasn't as good.
Do you think
he has kicked his last?
I think that's probably the case. Like my question though is like, was he not good because he was washed, or was he not good because this was crumbling down on him?
Oh, I could see that.
I mean, the other thing that I think is also noteworthy, no one's going to bat for Justin Tucker.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the Ravens say about him.
For sure.
If you look at all the players who could be traded, could be drafted, could be signed, the single most transformational player who was out there is Travis Hunter. And I say that because The Athletic tried to do that today. Is they combined draft and free agents into a single list.
Yep.
And like Myles Garrett is on this list, right? And they said the most transformational player available is Travis Hunter. Do you agree or not?
So I'm going to say I don't believe that, but he would be up for consideration for me. I still don't think he's as transformational as Myles Garrett.
He can't possibly. I suppose he could turn out to be. Listen, if he is in the NFL what he was in college, a legit, like, all-the-time two-way player who is both one of the best receivers in the league and best one of the cornerbacks in
something
the league.
Something we've never seen.
Something we've never seen before. And you can argue that Deion was maybe more important even than Myles Garrett. Like, Deion would erase half the field. Right,
yes.
But even then, is he more important than Myles Garrett? Myles Garrett's the best defensive player in the league right now.
Well, and I think the other thing that we're starting to see is like, is defensive line play back at the precipice because of how the Eagles just straight up dominated,
bullied. Yeah,
and if we're going to be in this era where the quarterbacks are making so much money, it's like a lot of these quarterbacks you can't really stop them. There's like one way to really stop them: never let them get going.
The list, by the way, Travis Hunter was one. Abdul Carter, the rusher from Penn State, who could go one in the draft.
Sure. Like,
honestly, for the reason we're seeing.
Exactly.
He's the best pass rusher to come out in the draft this year. And so he may go, he could go one, sort of, you know, following the footsteps of Micah Parsons. Then you got Myles Garrett is three on this list. Stafford is four on this list. It's weird to combine all these categories in one. Cam Ward is fifth. Former Tennessee Vol, Trey Smith, is sixth. He's going to be a rich man. I just hope he doesn't go. I'd like him to go to the Bears.
Let him beef up that
rather than stay in Kansas City or go to the Patriots or go to the Chargers, which are all possible landing spots. Then Mason Graham, the defensive tackle from Michigan. Then Ashton Jeanty. Doesn't it feel like, can't you just write in blood that he's going to be a Dallas Cowboy?
So that was the one that made the most sense to me, but it's weird how like most of the mocks you see, like they don't have that.
They don't have him going.
Now, obviously, Zach Martin also retiring last week. Like I know there's a lot of thoughts of, hey, that offensive line has been aging, or maybe they're going to try to beef up the offensive line first.
Davante Adams is 9, Sam Darnold is 10, Shedeur Sanders 11, Kirk Cousins 12, Aaron Rodgers 13, Will Johnson, the cornerback from Michigan, 14, Josh Sweat 15, and on we go. Okay, the Yankees, Jeffrey. Yankees, it's travesty that they're not going to be playing New York, New York after every game this year.
I don't believe that because I am a big believer of you need your victory song. You don't need the post game song. You need the song you play after you win.
We've seen this emerge in spring training. And do we have, can we have a little strains of New York? One of the things that surprised me about New York, New York, go ahead, cue up New York, New York. One of the things that surprised me is, do you know when it was written? What do you think was written?
Where?
When?
So Sinatra, I'm going to say late 50s.
Can this possibly rewrite? 77. It was written.
Well, this does sound like older Frank.
It was written for the Scorsese film in 1977. Sinatra performed it, started performing it in 78.
Yep, I'm showing written in 1977.
I was stunned. I just assumed it was a, you know, exactly, late 50s, early 60s Sinatra
standard.
I
was thinking like just Rat Pack, yeah.
1977. Liza Minnelli had a version of it. And there's some thoughts that they would play this, the Sinatra version sometimes, and the Liza Minnelli version, particularly after losses. But here's the thing. So I would say, when I heard they're not going to be playing New York, New York, I'm like, that is a travesty. You got to play New York, New York. But I think you need a different vibe after wins and losses. Now, they say they're going to rotate the losses, but they have a very, what they played the other day in spring training, I think when you hear it, it makes a lot of sense. Let's say you're a Yankees fan. You go to Yankee Stadium. They lose to the Red Sox, and you walk out, and you're listening to this. I mean, it's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. This is a good L song. I think they're actually, like, normally I think when you kind of start screwing with stuff, it's like more times than not you don't wind up with a better option.
I think this is better.
I think this works.
It's perfect. All right, Jeffrey. New York Yankees, absolutely travesty that they are abandoning their facial hair policy. There had been no facial hair. Now, and you're one who you could be a Yankee.
Well, thanks to my wife.
Well-groomed beards. Well-groomed beards. Also, does that mean a mustache not? A well-groomed beard? Acceptable?
So I think
if you're Raleigh
mustache,
Fingers, you could not pitch
for the mustache couldn't go past. Didn't Raleigh Fingers pitch for the Yankees?
I think of him as an A.
Goose Gossage had a, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Goose had must, and what the hell? What are we doing here?
Does Goose predate Steinbrenner?
He may predate the edict.
Because I will say this one thing.
How do you feel about what's wrong?
I did love this story.
With all the respect, as someone who could not have a beard if I spent the less rest of my life trying to have a beard, my people were a hairless people. What's wrong with a beard? Isn't a beard kind of fearsome?
I mean, it was definitely a George Steinbrenner thing.
Yes, but then Hal has kept it going.
Correct. One thing I did love was the story. I can't remember if it came from The Athletic or whatnot. One of the managers went into George and was like, Jesus had a beard. Why can't my players? And
that's
George pointed.
Decent point.
You see that pond out there? If you can go and walk on it, you can have a beard. I'm honestly, though, it shows where my brain is. This just meant, like, I was trying to think of, like, okay, who are some free agents they want to sign?
Oh, no, they just signed a pitcher who, exactly.
There we go.
Okay. Jeffrey, we'd all be better off in life if we had a nemesis. Someone whose your hatred of them or envy of them drives you to do things and accomplish things you would other not accomplish. And I bring this up because there's a piece in the New York Times today saying that, basically, why you two need a nemesis. And points to some very recent examples of grudge holders who've been very successful. Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar turns his feud with Drake, multiple Grammys, Super Bowl, all of that, right? Like, he is riding the grudge train.
Yes.
You know, to the very
even
top.
After the NFL told us literally not to hate, but yeah, continue.
Michael Jordan.
Yes.
He was offended by a rival coach not saying hi to him while out to dinner. A rival player saying hi to him at the gym. Anyone who wasn't him winning an MVP award by Clyde. Like, he was offended by anything.
He's the ultimate grudge guy.
You know who else? Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift. Like, isn't that song, the 10-minute breakup anthem that she has?
About
that
Jake
was,
Gyllenhaal?
That was for, like, a her relationship
all too,
lasted...
All Too Well, I think.
3 months, I think. We could talk to our Taylor Swift expert here.
Well, I mean, 90% of Taylor's songs are all relationship-based songs.
About people who whatever. So, isn't the evidence here that, and I'll ask you again, wouldn't we all do well to have a nemesis?
So I think I'll believe this only from the sense of, like, I am a big believer of competition is what, like, motivates you. Like, when you're just kind of, when things are going well, sometimes you need something to shake it up to see what you're capable of. The other thing that I find interesting about this is, as someone who can definitely err on the petty side, what I've always thought is people that actually are petty don't believe that they're petty. I think they believe they're right. But I think there's probably some type of link there that leads oftentimes to great work.
So I do think having a nemesis or proving someone wrong or whatever else can drive you to do things. And so that
an
having
external
that person,
motivation.
You know who was perfect here? John Calipari.
Yep.
Right? John Calipari has always had, whether he's, hell, I was one of them once. Like, he's always had the miserables, the people who doubt him, who he uses to fuel himself, like, whatever. I actually think it's not healthy. If you literally are motivated by, you're letting that person own you. You know what I mean?
I think like it kind of depends.
Like, I've had people who I've really not liked
right,
in my life.
I think the issue that we're talking about, though, is, are we talking about,
they're living rent-free in your head,
your personal happiness, or are we talking about success in a career? I do think those are two different things.
So you're saying it could be corrosive to your happiness,
yes,
and not healthy, but also
it could be it could be awesome,
could be
opportunity for art.
Could be a great motivator and also unhealthy.
Yes. I'm a big believer of pros and cons. Like, there are pluses and minuses to just about everything.
Yeah, I think that could be. I think. Have you ever had a nemesis?
Not really a nemesis.
I have to say.
Well, people always act like it's Freeze, but it really wasn't that. It was.
Oh, yeah, Freeze.
The thing with Freeze was just, I always push back on the you can't say anything bad about him. It's like, no, I will.
Hey, it's my engagement. It's not my engagement. It's my
anniversary
today. If you're thinking of getting engaged, head over to Robert Irwin Jewelers, the number one place to buy your engagement ring for all kinds of reasons.
Can confirm.
You walk in there, Jeffrey can confirm, they have an enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They make it incredibly easy for you. They got the peace of mind guarantee. So, you buy your loose diamond or custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it. That gives you incredible peace of mind. On top of that, you got the free ring sizing. You got the jewelry spa service for life. You got the 24 months deferred interest. You got the 60 months to pay at a low APR. All of that, they're great in there. I was shopping in there just over Christmas. And that was for diamond earrings. But if you're getting engaged, again, you'd be silly not to drop in and see the folks at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Visit the Diamond Showroom on Perkins, South Haven off of Goodman Road, or in the Bartlett Town Center in Bartlett. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jeff will join them at 1:25. Jason Munns will join Coach Hurd and I today on Jeff Wright and Company. Seth Hennigan will join Gabe at 4:30. Cobb at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, big day on 92.9. We'll be back tomorrow for now. Work is done.